America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to celebrate some of the great traditions of this nation, including the tradition of a civilized and substantive debate, even on explosive issues of science and culture, where people may have very, very impassioned disagreements. It is our Science and Culture Update Hour on the Michael Medved Show with scholars from the Discovery Institute and others who fervently disagree with them, including Zach Coplin. Zach Coplin joins us. He is a student at Rice University. He's young, but he's gotten a great deal of attention. He's appeared on the Bill Maher Show. He's appeared with Bill Moyers. He has written syndicated columns. He has been described as a science education activist from Louisiana who made a name for himself opposing what he describes as a Louisiana creationism law. Zach Coplin, great to speak with you over the phone.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's great to be on your show.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate your coming on the show. Casey Luskin has been on the show before. He was on with us last week. He is the research coordinator for Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. He's an attorney who is also trained in earth science. First of all, let me go to Casey Luskin, because I've been reading some of the material that's very well written and well put together by Zach Coplin attacking this Louisiana law, which when he was back in high school, he's now at Rice University, he led a campaign and got some international support to repeal this law. You're a defender of the Louisiana law. Do you like the idea of forcing teachers to teach creationism in public schools?
No, Discovery Institute does not support teaching creationism in public schools. And we recognize that many courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, have found creationism to be a religious belief. And as a result, none of our policies that we've ever advocated have supported teaching creationism. And I want to also say—
By the way, let's back up for a moment. Don't you agree that creationism is a religious belief?
I do agree with that. Creationism is a religious belief. It should not be advocated in public schools. That is not my position. So if people say otherwise, then they're not speaking for my position.
Okay. Zach Coplin, your position regarding the Louisiana law, does it require that creationism be taught in public schools?
So this law is a creationism law, and it's not just my position. It's the sponsor of the laws and Governor Bobby Jindal's. So, for example, Governor Bobby Jindal recently said, we have what's called the Science Education Act that says if a teacher wants to supplement these materials, and what it's talking about in this law is supplementing materials in evolution, if the school board's okay with that, if the state school board's okay with that, they can supplement these materials. Then he goes on to say, I've got no problem if a school board, a local school board, says we want to teach our kids about creationism, that some people have these beliefs as well. Let's teach them about intelligent design. I think teach them the best science. So Governor Bobby Jindal agrees with me on this. It's a creationism law. And if creationism is unconstitutional, then why do we have this law?
Casey Luskin.
Well, I respectfully disagree with Zach. And Zach, I appreciate your enthusiasm, your determination, your passion. We might disagree on some of these issues, but conviction and determination doesn't mean that you're correct. Senator Ben Nevers, the sponsor of the law, when he was speaking before the Louisiana Senate Education Committee, he said this law is strictly about teaching science in the science classroom. It has nothing to do with religion. I don't think that Governor Jindal really understands very much about the law. He was not involved with the passage of the law. Frankly, so many critics have put out this false talking point that the law allows the teaching of creationism that it actually might have been some of you and your colleagues, Zach, who confused Bobby Jindal about what the law actually means. The law, I'll quote from the law. The law actually says, this section shall not be construed to promote any religious doctrine, to promote discrimination for or against a particular set of religious beliefs, or promote discrimination for or against religion or non-religion. So my question is, how can critics claim that a law that has explicit language saying that it does not protect religion is somehow some great conspiracy to push religion into schools? Religion is not protected explicitly under the law.
So there's three points
to address there. Governor Jindal, Senator Nevers, and then the talking points. So I hope you'll let me go through all of them. So first, while Senator Nevers may have told the Senate Education Committee one thing, he also said, I've got the quote right here, he's talking about the Louisiana Family Forum, a local religious right group, believe the scientific data related to creationism should be discussed when dealing with Darwin's theory. This would allow the discussion of scientific facts. He said that about a bill that was the precursor to the Louisiana Science Education Act. So that's Nevers. On Jindal, I'd say I think Governor Jindal is a very smart man. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He may not be a lawyer, but he was a congressman. He's been intimately involved with crafting legislation. He's been the governor of a state. He graduated from Ivy League. He's a very smart man. I would not say he doesn't understand the law he signed himself. He was in support of this for years. I think he knows exactly what he signed. And then the last point on the disclaimer, which is the last thing you brought up, is that this disclaimer is not a new tactic. It's actually an old creationist tactic. And there was a similar disclaimer on the Balanced Treatment Act for creationism that was thrown out in Louisiana almost 30 years ago in Edwards versus Aguilar. It's an old creationist strategy to sneak creationists in the classroom to put a disclaimer on there.
Okay, Zach Copeland, where does the law stand right now? Has it been enjoined? I'm sure there are lawsuits regarding this law.
There are no lawsuits on it right now.
Are you working on one?
Not that I have any plans right now.
Okay, so tell me this. I know you've graduated from high school, from a magnet high school in Louisiana, and you're now a student at Rice University in Houston. Do you know if there have been any incidents or complaints of creationism actually being taught in Louisiana schools as a result of this legislation?
So I wish I knew what was happening in the individual school level. I wish I could be in there.
Don't you think you would hear about it if there had been an episode?
Not necessarily, no. I don't think I would hear about it because the way this is structured is that it's a loophole. So if a student opposes this, they first have to know their rights are being violated, which most students won't know. Then they have to be brave enough to stand up and do something about it. And then they have to even know where to go. So it's really sort of tough to get through that process. And I actually don't expect that there's that much news that's going to come out of what's basically a loophole for individual teachers to sneak creationism into the classroom.
Let me just back up for a second, and then I'll give Casey Luskin a chance for a moment, because I just want to understand your thinking, Zach, and I'd want to do this all respect. You said students whose rights were being violated.
If they're being taught creationism, yes.
If you are taught something that you think is stupid, I mean, you think it's profoundly stupid, and your parents think it's stupid, and you think it has no scientific basis, and you just hate it, and you loathe it, why is that a violation of your rights? What right do you have to be free from ever being exposed to ideas you disagree with?
You have a right to be exposed to them, but it's not in the public school setting is the key. A philosophy class, a religious studies class, a history class, you can even bring religious ideas into an English class in the context of illusions and stuff like that. But in a science class, science is just simply the way we explain the natural world. And that's all it is. It says nothing about disagreement. But creationism is not science. Intelligent design creationism is still not science. I know Casey will disagree strongly with me on that. But it's still not science. It doesn't belong in a public school science class. And so allowing it to be snuck in is a violation of rights because it's not science.
Casey Luskin.
Well, I'd actually like to also make another point about this claim that Bobby Jindal said the law allows the teaching of creationism. Actually, when he was speaking about teaching creationism, he was not talking about the Louisiana Science Education Act. He was talking about his own policy preference. So I think that there's been some representation of what some of these people have said about the law. Now, as far as does the law allow creationism or intelligent design, or is there a loophole to teach religion or creationism? Again, I quote you from the law. This section shall not be construed to promote any religious doctrine. How can a law that explicitly said that if you teach religion, you are not protected by the law? How can a law that says that somehow be a sneak attack to push religion into public schools? And as far as intelligent design goes, intelligent design, and of course I do respectfully disagree with you, Zach, it's different from creationism. Intelligent design starts with the scientific data and uses the scientific method, whereas creationism basically starts with some interpretation of the Bible and then tries to prove some religious interpretation or some religious belief. ID, however, is not protected under the Louisiana Science Education Act either. Discovery Institute, we do not support pushing ID into public schools, even though we think it's a science. The law, the Louisiana Science Education Act, only protects topics that are already in the curriculum, and ID is not in the curriculum.
Let me ask a very direct question to both gentlemen, if we can get a quick answer, because we're coming up to a break. To Zach Copeland first. I know you're familiar with some of the books that are associated with the intelligent design movement. For instance, Stephen Meyer's previous book, The Signature in the Cell. Do you think that that should be permitted to be taught in public schools?
I don't think so. I actually am not very familiar. So what I'll say is I'm not very familiar with Stephen Meyer's book.
Okay, Casey Luskin, Signatures in the Cell, should it be permitted in public schools?
I don't think it should be banned, but because the book does advocate ID, I don't think we should be, you know, pushing it into the public schools. What I do think should be taught are papers like a 2011 paper in Biological Theory, which said that Darwinism in its current scientific incarnation has pretty much reached the end of its rope. There are hundreds of mainstream peer-reviewed scientific papers, Michael, that challenge Darwinism. Students should be allowed to hear about them.
Should Thomas Nagel be taught in public schools, a great atheist philosopher who has challenged Darwinism? Should a new scientist, Masatoshi Nei, be taught in public schools? We'll get to that and more with our two debaters, Koplan and Luskin, on The Medved Show. 1-800-95- Twenty-one minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, where we're covering our science and culture hour, we're going to get to the case of Professor Eric Hedin at Ball State University in Indiana a little bit later this hour with a lively exchange involving two brilliant young men. One is Zach Koplan. He is an activist who describes himself as a science education activist. He is also a full-time student and a history major at Rice University in Houston, Texas. And Casey Lufkin is the research coordinator for Discovery Institute here in Seattle. He is also an attorney and someone who has undergraduate degrees in earth sciences. Gentlemen, we were just talking before about the nature of books that should be banned or not in public schools. And I just want to throw out a couple of more books. One of them is a new book that I haven't read yet. I don't think either of you have read it either. But it's going to be released in a couple of weeks, in June 14th, by Oxford University Press. And it's by a very prominent biologist, a molecular evolutionary geneticist, actually, at Penn State, whose name is Masatoshi Nei. It's called Mutation-Driven Evolution. And Zach, here is the way they describe it at the end of the listing for the book. They say, in contrast to neo-Darwinism, mutation-driven evolution is capable of explaining real examples of evolution, such as the evolution of olfactory receptors, sex determination in animals, and the general scheme of hybrid sterility. In this sense, the theory proposed here is more realistic than its predecessors, including, apparently, the theory of evolution, and gives a more logical explanation of various evolutionary events. Would your guess be that sort of book, the book is called Mutation-Driven Evolution, should be banned from public schools?
Actually, I don't know anything about the book, and I haven't read it. And so my approach would actually be to go talk to the scientists, have the scientists review it, the scientists go through it, and if there's good stuff in it, then it can be taught. But if it's not scientific, I have no clue because I don't know anything about this book. And I'm certainly not the one to make that judgment. That's for scientists to actually make that judgment. I actually ask the scientists about whether it's good science. And if it's good science, can be taught. If it's not, if the evidence backs it, which is the key for good science, if the evidence backs it, but if the evidence doesn't back it, like the evidence does not back intelligent design, for example, and all these, often these critiques of Darwin, which we talked about earlier, are really just ways to sneak intelligent design in, then it shouldn't be taught. So that's really the distinction, is it science or not? And intelligent design, creationism aren't science, and all these critiques of Darwin, evolution's lasted 150 years through continuous pressure from creationists, from scientists, from everyone. It's a very strong theory. It's not under any real threat. There's not a controversy. So all these critiques and stuff are really just backdoor ways to sneak in creationism, which was sort of what we were getting at the very end of the last segment.
Casey Luskin.
Well, essentially, I'd like to call the bluff on this talking point that there is no scientific controversy over Darwinian evolution. As I said earlier, Michael, at the very end, I don't know if people heard me, there are hundreds of mainstream scientific papers in the peer-reviewed literature that are challenging core tenets of evolutionary theory. A 2012 paper in the journal Annual Review of Genetics, which of course was peer-reviewed, challenged universal common ancestry and argued that life might indeed have had multiple origins. A 2009 paper in BioEssays talked about the Cambrian explosion and how difficult it is to explain it. It said, elucidating the materialistic basis of the Cambrian explosion has become more elusive, not less, the more we know about the event itself. So if scientists can note that some core tenets of Darwinian theory, like the tree of life hypothesis or the ability of natural selection and random mutation to explain events like the Cambrian explosion, if they can challenge these consensus, quote-unquote consensus views, there's no reason that students have to be told this bluff, this falsehood, this untrue claim that there is no dispute among scientists about Darwinian theory. I call the bluff. I can quote from hundreds of peer-reviewed papers, if necessary, to show that there are scientists that are challenging core tenets of Darwinian theory. And as for this book by Masatoshi Oné, I haven't read the book either. Nobody has. It doesn't come out for a few weeks here. But Masatoshi Oné, he actually posted a comment on ResearchGate a couple days ago where he said that the concept of survival of the fittest is so hard to use by biologists that it's basically a tautology. Now, that would go directly against what many students are learning in their textbooks. And he's not the first scientist to note that the concept of natural selection, survival of the fittest, does not have very much explanatory value. The problem here is that there are credible leading scientists like Masatoshi Oné from Penn State and many others who are raising these challenges to what students literally are being taught in their textbooks. I think students have the right to hear about, should have the right to hear about this. Zach Coplin wants to pretend that these views are creationism and then try to censor them from students through what I would call an abuse of the First Amendment.
All right, let's, if we can, use our First Amendment rights and go to some of our callers. To Pete in Riverside, California, you're on the MedVed Show with Zach and Casey.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Something that might fundamentally change the argument here, and I'd like to hear their comments on this on both sides, is I think we focus on, when we say the creation of life, I think we need to separate that into two arguments, the creation of life and the creation of intelligence. And I know that has some built-in gotchas for both of them in there, but I'm kind of agnostic on how life was created, but I'm not agnostic on how intelligence is created.
Meaning, what? What does that mean to you? In other words, when you say you're agnostic.
In other words, okay, now this is extrapolating way far out here, but for example, if we assume that we've been around for a few million years and the universe has been around for, 14, 15, 20 billion years, is it so hard to conceive that some life form developed its intelligence such that it became so super intelligent that we can't detect it for the life of us? We will not be able to do it. And if we can focus on, say, the creation of life, and all agree maybe at some point that maybe life was created, but life at some point on Earth was imbued with intelligence from a higher source, not God necessarily, but maybe just a much, much more similar. Michael, you probably read Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke. This is what probably triggered this in me years ago.
Okay, Zach Coplin.
So there's two things about that. The first is, rather than try and worry about it, of the specifics with it, you were just saying, well, what if it was created by something we can't detect? Well, science can't, if it's supernatural or beyond science's comprehension, then science can only comment on natural, what we can understand, what we can observe, what we can study. We can't really comment on that. It's not science. There's no evidence anywhere for that. So if there was some evidence, great, but without the evidence, not part of science. But the second point, which I think is actually the important point here, is that there's a distinction between that and between intelligent design, where intelligent design specifically rejects evolution, and I wasn't sure if the caller was specifically rejecting evolution or if he was espousing something that's called theistic evolution, where he was just saying, well, what if some higher power started evolution? And I'm perfectly happy with people saying, well, a higher power started evolution. That this, if you accept the science, that's great. We'll teach the science in science class.
And okay, I am not really sure where there's going to be disagreement on what you just said from Casey Luskin, but we're going to hear about that and more in debating how you teach life sciences in public schools with Casey Luskin and Zach Coplin. More coming up.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
34 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, where you'll love new window coverings from Blinds.com, but you don't need to worry about mismeasuring because it's 100% risk-free. If you ever mismeasure, they'll remake it for you for free, and now you can save an extra 20% on select insulating honeycomb cell shades to help reduce your air conditioning bills this summer, Harry, and you'll also get a free upgrade to sleek-looking cordless on many of their most popular products at Blinds.com. Before I go back to Casey Luskin here, and then we go back to your calls at 1-800-955-1776, let me just get something straight from the position on Zach Coplin, who's become very well known across the country and really around the world for his advocacy on this issue. Zach, do I have it right that what you're saying is that it would be okay in a science class for a teacher to say there is no scientific evidence one way or another on this issue? We have no scientific verifiable explanation. Would that be all right for a teacher to say?
What I think you're getting at is that the whole point is you don't bring religion into the science class just because.
Right. I didn't mention religion. I'm talking about science. For instance, you had mentioned the origins of life. If would it be all right for a science teacher to give his or her best judgment, and there are many science teachers who do give this best judgment, that there is no scientific explanation that is credible, that has so far been put forward for the origins of life from matter?
So there's been actually some experiments on it, but you can teach. And again, because I'm a history major, so I don't really want to comment on science. And
right, but that's what you're doing. I'm just trying to get it. Do you really think should a teacher be afraid that he or she could get in trouble for saying what I just said?
A teacher is not going to get in trouble for teaching the science. Is what the key point is.
You're dodging the question. If a teacher says there is no evidence that I deem credible. Mm-hmm. On this issue of the origins of life.
If there is scientific evidence for something and they say that, that'd be wrong, which is the problem. If there's no evidence for a specific thing, then sure, if there's actually no evidence. But if there's evidence and they say there's no evidence, then that's actually a problem.
Casey Luskin.
Actually, I'm really glad to hear that. I assume that Zach would be okay with a teacher telling students what Harvard chemist George Whiteside said in Chemical Engineering News in 2007. He said, "The origin of life. This problem was one of the big ones in science. It begins to place life and us in the universe. Most chemists believe, as do I, that life emerged spontaneously from mixtures of molecules in the prebiotic earth. How? I have no idea." Or what a paper in the journal Complexity wrote in 2009. It said, "Many different ideas are competing, and none is available to provide a sufficiently plausible route to the first living organism." So if I'm hearing Zach correctly, then the fact that there are peer-reviewed scientists from Harvard in these very eminent journals saying that there is no highly accepted explanation for the origin of life, and really they have no idea how it happened, that would be okay for a teacher to tell their students under the Science Education Act. That's all I'm saying teachers have the right to do. Despite what some critics may say, I'm not saying that teachers should be teaching religion or creationism or any of that.
Or intelligent design.
Because I
think that's significant. The Discovery Institute position, and Zach, I hope you're gratified by this, is that there should be no ability to teach intelligent design in public schools. Is that right?
I'm asking Casey Luskin.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely right. And so all I'm saying is that when a Harvard chemist says in a peer-reviewed journal, "I have no idea how the origin of life occurred," that students should be able to learn about that from their teachers without those teachers having to fear for losing their jobs, because that's been a real problem, these fears that teachers have.
Zach Coplin.
So here we're actually missing the entire point here. This is actually what the Science Education Act allows. So, Casey, the Discovery Institute sent your lobbyist from out of state, from the Northwest, down to Louisiana, Josh Youngkin, and he sat at the witness table next to a woman, Suzanne Passman, who, like many of all the proponents of the Louisiana Science Education Act, when she testified, she said, "All this is about is critical thinking and academic freedom and making sure teachers can help their students think and do that kind of stuff." The problem is, in reality, she also runs creationevidence.info, where she highlights the Louisiana Science Education Act and suggests some supplemental materials. And now she suggests some from the Discovery Institute from y'all,
And she also suggests some from the Institute for Creation Research and Answers in Genesis, home of the Creation Museum.
Okay, when we come back, I see there is Casey Luskin very eager to respond on this one. We will get back to your calls and also to the case of Professor Eric Hedin. He's a physicist with tremendously positive reviews who's in trouble at Indiana's Ball State University. Should he be? That and more coming up.
Michael Medved.
Minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, where it's easy to save 15% or even more in car insurance with Geico. You just go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO, and the only hard part is figuring out which way is even easier. We call the show your daily dose of debate, particularly because of days like this where we have two very capable debaters. Zach Coplin is a very well-informed and articulate young man. He has politics in his family's background. His father has been professionally involved as an aide to two different Louisiana governors. Zach is a student at Rice University in Houston, where he is majoring in history. Casey Luskin has not just an undergraduate degree, but a graduate degree, a master's degree from University of California, San Diego, very prestigious campus, and his master's degree is in earth sciences. He is also an attorney. And he is the research director for Discovery Institute. Zach, you were kind of bouncing up and down in the chair here when Casey was bouncing up and down in the chair here when Zach was speaking about the background of what is called the science education bill in Louisiana. Where did you want to take him on?
Yeah, it's interesting. Zach mentioned, I guess, some woman in Louisiana who has some creationist website and said that someone from Discovery Institute was sitting next to her at a hearing. Well, it's my understanding that the order of the seats there was actually established by the committee chair based upon the chronological order of the committee of the testimony card. So I don't think that she has this woman, as far as I'm aware, has no affiliation or with Discovery Institute. I don't know who she is. The reality is that the fact that somebody has a website about creationism doesn't mean that the bill is therefore allows teaching creationism. If a teacher were to teach creationism under the law, they would be violating the law because the law, as I've repeatedly said, says this section shall not be construed to promote any religious doctrine.
And you do hold, as Zach does, that creationism is a religious doctrine.
Creationism is a religious belief. I agree with the Supreme Court's ruling on that. It should not be advocated in public schools, and that's why the law is consistent with that. So, I mean, really, the problem here, what Zach wants to do is he wants to look at this, I guess, let's just assume for the sake of argument, this woman is a creationist. I don't know her. So what? So what that she's a creationist and has a website? The fact that people have their own personal religious beliefs or anti-religious beliefs doesn't mean that therefore they're trying to push religion in public schools. For example, one of the leading evolution lobbyists in Louisiana who has worked with Mr. Coplin on trying to repeal the Science Education Act is Professor Barbara Forrest, who's a member of the New Orleans Secular Humanist Association and is a very, very active atheist activist. Dr. Harry Croteau, one of the Nobel laureates that helped Zach to organize all of these scientists trying to oppose the bill, he himself is an avowed atheist who is called religious belief, quote unquote, dangerous. So people on the...
Let me get this clear. You would, at Discovery Institute, you would have no desire at all to limit what such individuals can say in science classrooms, would you?
Absolutely not. They can, if they want to talk about science, that's fine. And if these people want to have their own atheistic beliefs on the side, that's fine too. But we shouldn't get into this motive mongering of people's personal beliefs, because if Zach wants to do that, there are plenty of anti-religious atheists that are trying to attack the LSEA in Louisiana.
Zach, go ahead.
Is that on her website, she highlights the Louisiana Science Education Act and suggests specific supplemental materials. I mentioned she suggests some from the Discovery Institute, and I didn't suggest she was affiliated with you. I was more suggesting Josh was next to her, so he might remember.
Good. Thank you. Let's go to John in Scarsdale, New York. John, you're on with Zach and Casey.
Good afternoon, good afternoon, gentlemen. I was calling just because I wanted to say it's my opinion, and I think a logical one, that science is an evidence-based discipline, and that wishful thinking or willful ignorance are not alternative points of view. If I could get enough people together to decide that the Easter Bunny causes DNA sequencing or peanut butter and jelly allows for time travel, no matter how many people believed it, it would not be something that would be demonstrable. And I don't think that having creationism in a science classroom would be a reasonable thing. I mean,
no, nor does anyone here, or nor does anyone at Discovery Institute. In other words, everyone is in agreement. Creationism should not be taught in a science classroom. Zach, you agree with that. Casey,
yeah,
you agree with that.
If we're all in agreement, then
okay,
the law,
we're,
then
there,
we're
it's
in agreement,
unanimous.
The law should be there.
It's unanimous. Okay.
And I have a question.
Go ahead.
In a religious curriculum, should there be any mention of the fact that there is no scientific, no empirical proof of the existence of God? And I'm not even denying that God exists.
Of course there should be.
I'm just saying, should you be acknowledging in the classroom, gee, you know, nobody really ever figured out if God is there.
If you're teaching in a public school and you're teaching religion in a public school classroom, I think that there certainly should be no restriction on making that point. But I'm not one of those people. I don't think legislators should be determining exactly what teachers teach. Do you, Zach?
Well, it's evidence-based, though, guys. Yeah, science.
But I understand, but do you really think that legislatures are a better place to determine what is evidence-based than the classroom?
No, but what I'm saying here is, though, a lot of people who are pushing religion and intelligent design and creationism, there are people out there who have museums and exhibits with a whole lot of
But John, you're bringing up straw men. No one here believes that the people who have the creation museum, in fact, I don't think they're even pushing at the moment to get in public schools, are they, Casey?
No, I don't think so. And I personally have no problem with the idea that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. We're not talking about teaching, you know, whether the Easter Bunny exists or whatever some of these red herring comments. We're talking about, yes, what is evidence-based? And when Nobel Prize-winning physicist Robert Laughlin at Stanford says that evolution by natural selection has come to function as an anti-theory, called upon to cover up embarrassing experimental shortcomings and legitimize findings that are at best questionable and at worst not even wrong, when a leading scientist, a Nobel laureate, says things like that, students should be able to learn that there are credible scientists that challenge the Darwinian theory that they're being taught in their textbooks. That's all I'm saying. And it's evidence-based.
Zach Koplan.
Nobel laureates say to repeal this law.
What's that?
What happens when 78 Nobel laureate scientists say to repeal this law because it's meant to promote creationism, which is not science?
Well, I would like to note that in this letter that Zach worked with this atheist Nobel laureate, Harry Croteau, to compile, that the letter never quotes from the Louisiana Science Education Act. It makes these false assertions, like we have heard today, that the law allows the teaching of creationism, but it never quotes from the law where it says this section shall not be construed to promote any religious doctrine. So whether they're Nobel laureates or not, we have to look at their arguments. Their arguments do not hold up to scrutiny.
We will be right back. I'm glad to see that Louisiana education has become so outstanding and so excellent that the biggest threat to Louisiana students getting world-class education is the Louisiana Science Education Act. We'll be right back.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com. Portions of the Michael Medved Show are brought to you in part by the Discovery Institute. To learn more, click on the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com.
And with two such ardent advocates as Zach Koplan and Casey Luskin, we haven't even been able to get to the case of Professor Eric Hedin. If you want to find out about that case, and by all means, if you want to join the thousands of people who've already signed a petition in support, not of everything that Dr. Professor Hedin, who's a physics professor at Ball State University, believes or teaches, but his right to teach that in a classroom setting at university level. If you support that right, go to academicfreedompetition.com. That's academicfreedompetition.com. Or you can go directly to our website, to michaelmedved.com, and click on the banner on science and culture, and it will take you there. Closing statements, gentlemen. We have very limited time. Zach Koplan, summing up.
on this, which is the governor of Louisiana said this is a creationism law. The senator who sponsored this bill said it's a creationism law. Livingston Parish in Louisiana talked about implementing this law and teaching creationism with it. Said it was for, quote, their director of curriculum said it was for critical thinking and creationism. Creationism, we all agree, shouldn't be in the classroom. 78 Nobel laureates have said it should be out of the classroom. Major science organizations have said that should be out of the classroom. This law is for creationism, and that doesn't belong in science classes. And now we've talked, one last point, we've talked a lot about this disclaimer. It's the exact same, it's a very, very similar disclaimer to one that was on Louisiana's first creationism law that was thrown out by the courts. The key is not whether there's a random disclaimer on the end to try and make it okay. The key is whether what the law is meant to promote. And the lawmakers who signed the law, who passed the law, and the way it's being implemented is for creationism. And that's a problem that should be repealed.
Casey Luskin.
I appreciate Zach's enthusiasm and determination, but repeating this talking point that the law allows creationism over and over again doesn't make it right. The big difference between the Science Education Act and the one that was struck down by the Supreme Court is that the Supreme Court struck down a law that explicitly allowed creation science, which obviously is religion. In this case, what the law allows teachers to do is to bring in objective critiques and critical analysis of scientific theories like evolution, and it explicitly does not protect the teaching of creationism. And what we've heard today is that there are many peer-reviewed scientists who have challenged the core tenets of Darwinian evolution. This talking point that there is no scientific evidence that challenges evolution is simply not true. And if scientists are allowed to debate these issues in the peer-reviewed journals, there's no reason students shouldn't be allowed to also learn that there is legitimate, credible science that challenges the core tenets of evolution. And it's unfortunate. You know, I appreciate Zach's enthusiasm, but the reality is that this evolution lobby that he works with is trying to censor from students good science.
All right. One of the questions that I just have, sort of standing back here and not really being in or from Louisiana, is if they have no examples of anyone teaching creationism so far, if no one has even challenged this law in court so far, what are we talking about at this point? It would seem to me that, well, let's find and follow how this plays out. And I'm sure we will in subsequent science and culture updates, a contribution, we hope, to this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.